very unfortunate situation. I've heard a little bit in the press and read a few of the articles about what's going on. It's a very sad day in Illinois.
In his heart, he has always wanted to do what was right and what was good. And got a little careless.
There should be some honor and some modesty when you're elected.
You're listening to Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
Governor Rauner, I assume it was Aaron Schock's dad as well in there somewhere? Not good when your dad says he'll be great in a couple of years if he doesn't end up in jail. But dad got kind of ambushed by, I don't know, somebody from Channel 7 found him. Let's get going here. Eric Adelstein's here. Adelstein Liston. What do you guys do?
We do media for electoral campaigns and public affairs.
And Pat Brady's here. What does your company do, Pat, and what are they?
Next Generation Public Affairs Advocacy NPR.
Twitter handles, by the way, at ADEL64 and at Pat_Brady. And Rick Pearson's here, Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com, and the Sunday Spin here on WGN. Who's your guest on Sunday? Let me turn your microphone on. Try that again.
I've got Aaron Lawler, the Lake County Board Chairman, who is going to be on talking about some of the ideas as Governor Rauner has formed a task force on reducing government and government spending. Aaron's got some ideas that he's presented in Lake County, and we're going to talk about that. So actually saving money.
For 7 a.m. On Sunday.
7 to 9.
Would those be efficiencies that he's looking at, the Chewy Garcia efficiencies? Is that what we're talking about?
Except these are actually, he's got some written down.
I see. Start with Aaron Schock here, obviously. What are the rules now as far as picking a replacement go?
So the resignation is supposed to take effect at the end of this month.
Is it just coincidental that it's like 2 weeks notice? So you leave a job, you give 2 weeks notice?
I don't know what the federal pay cycle is,
right,
if that has anything to do with it. So at the end of the month, then the governor has 5 days to set an election. That election has to be within 115 days, I think, something like that. And there will be a primary, there will be a general election. But for all practical purposes, given how deeply Republican that district is, it's the Republican primary that really will be the likely decider here.
And when do we expect the special election to take place, ballpark?
Really no idea. I mean, you know, we got a new governor. He has to figure these things out.
Pat, Brady, you mentioned the other day it's going to be a little expensive because this is a big spread out sort of district, right?
Yeah, the clerk estimated it's going to cost the district like $150,000. So not super expensive, but certainly a lot of money.
Well, it's a lot of money down there.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I would think that Governor Rauner would do this very, very quickly. Try to set the schedule as quickly as you can, because it does benefit, I think, the establishment Republicans down there. The people that have been mentioned, Darren LaHood, State Senator Darren LaHood, my cousin Dan Brady down there, and Jill Tracy has been mentioned as well.
Yes.
We mentioned, apparently, there are over 500,000 Bradys in central Illinois. Is that accurate?
Yeah, but there's Hill Bradys and then there's Flatlanders. I mean, there's a lot of clans down there.
Is there an obvious favorite in this?
Probably right now, State Senator Darren LaHood, whose dad was former Secretary of Transportation, also the congressman down there for a long, long time. A long political Republican history down there. That district, actually, not the district number, goes back to Abraham Lincoln, Joe Cannon, the longest-serving speaker. So I would think Darren, with the name ID, the ability to raise money, his organization, or somebody like my cousin Dan, who's real retail politician, has good name ID and probably could put an organization together, those would be. Or maybe Jill Tracy, whose former state rep district had 8 of the counties. So I would think anybody that's has been established has some name ID.
And she was the lieutenant governor candidate for
Kirk Dillard.
Kirk Dillard.
Yeah.
So there,
okay.
She's got a little bit of...
Yeah, yeah.
And she's I think, has personal means. Personal.
Didn't we have her on?
Yeah, we did.
So I thought. And let me get Eric in on this. This is a stupid question to ask, but I'll ask it anyway. How could somebody that smart be that stupid? And is this just another example of power corrupts?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't, you know, Shakespeare, not to sound all literary, but said insolence of office. And I think when you're a lot, we've seen it over and over again, you get in those places, you think you're entitled to a certain lifestyle and you convince yourself, you probably believed he wasn't doing anything wrong. And it's sad, you know, Republican or Democrats, it's a sad day because it just contributes more to the cynicism that people think it's all broken, they're all in it for themselves, and none of it really matters. And that's sad.
This one feels particularly damaging because the people of central Illinois not only believed in this kid, they believed in him hard. and really supported him.
He got 74% of the vote in the last election.
Yeah, and is there a rationale that goes on when you get to be that narcissistic where you go, look, I'm doing a lot of good here, so I deserve this.
And look, I said this, I think we talked about this last week. I think when you don't have competitive districts, it's not a Democrat or Republican thing. When they don't have to fight for their seats, they believe they're entitled. And I think with that comes a certain narcissism and a certain behavior that we've seen over and over again. Not everybody, but a certain character type in that situation can't handle it.
And then you see, as you spend more time in Congress where seniority matters, and you start getting to be, you know, like on the House Ways and Means Committee, the most powerful committee in Congress, which kind of almost feeds that kind of... you know, I'm in the entitlement that you have.
That's right.
And that's why it's doubly bad, because he is on the House Ways and Means Committee, and Illinois loses that kind of influence on it, that most influential committee.
We tend to learn things, or say we learn things, when scandal breaks. I think that's the public more than Congress. Congress makes their own rules, and the spending rules are certainly gray at best. Do they learn anything from this? Do they change anything?
I don't know. I mean, there are tons of ethics rules. It's not as if, you know... He was pushing the envelope or doing things that were appropriate. I think most members of Congress or Congress watchers, when the stuff came to light, were kind of shaking their heads saying, are you kidding me? There was nobody there telling them, what are you doing, kid?
Well, explain that, though. All three of you guys, who's in charge of that? Is it your staff's job to watch you, or is there oversight that's a little closer than that?
It depends if the prosecutor's asking you the question, I guess.
Well, I mean,
which may happen, which may happen soon as well.
Sure, part of it is staff. I mean, but also, I would have an accountant, kind of, you know, routinely.
Well, especially
there.
The dollar. I mean, he was one of the most prolific fundraisers on the Republican side that raised and spent millions. You'd think at the very least you'd have a CPA looking at this.
You know, when you go to college, the college gives you a set of rules on what you're allowed to do and what you're not. When these guys go to Congress, their caucus says, here's what you can do, here's what you can't do. How many of them actually read it? How many actually follow it? You know, it's not that complicated.
And Pat, you and I are golfers. You ask for a ruling. If there's something you're not sure about before you do it, you ask for... Look, I liked Aaron Schock. I don't like what he did, but I used this analogy yesterday with Andrea. I don't walk across Walgreens and go, man, I'm feeling like some M&Ms, and I put them in my pocket and walk out the front door. You are either inclined to steal or you're not. It's a character thing with me, and his character is damaged to have done this.
You know, I talked to one former member of Congress, and the story about he asked for more reimbursement than the miles on the car. I said, somebody's writing a story that says he had the campaign buy a car, but then charged the taxpayers for mileage, which is not illegal. And the former member said, that might not be illegal, but I don't know anybody that would do that.
Right, right. If your defense is that wasn't that illegal. Well, and how about this thing, which, again, this is all alleged, but it seems to be pretty fact-based reporting. I don't know any grown-up that would say it's okay to have a $300,000 property and a $600,000 mortgage on the property without thinking, oh, a question might pop up about this.
Yeah, and of all of this, and I know the expense reimbursement is easiest to understand, and particularly when Dan Rostenkowski gets indicted for stamps, but the thing that's most troubling to me is the real estate, because that's removed from the ethics rules, that's removed from blaming it on a staffer. That's stuff that, you know, those are business deals that you made the decisions on.
And frankly, he has a history of buying, selling, acquiring property.
Going back to when he was 18 years old.
Very early age.
Yeah, but, you know, the only silver lining, or maybe a couple, but the silver lining for the Republicans is he didn't hang on forever. He didn't wait until something really bad like an indictment happened before he resigned. He got out and it got done. Hopefully with the special election we can put this behind us, but it's always going to be in the political discussion.
If you're Jesse Jackson Jr., Rick, you're sitting in a cell going, there's room. I got a bunk. I mean, he's got serious legal problems here, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And, I mean, obviously we don't know whether there's no public indication that federal prosecutors are the Justice Department's involved in this yet.
Yeah, but I'm the last person to defend any of the Jacksons, including Jesse Jackson Jr. or Tito. Having said that, how is this different than what Jesse Jackson Jr. did, except one has a Michael Jackson hat and the other has a presidential podium?
Well, you know, when you're looking at really serious issues of defrauding the taxpayer and defrauding the public, you've also got, you know, potential violations of campaign finance rules going on here. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are there, similar, very similar to some of the things that Congressman Jackson got. But you know, we need to see and watch the prosecution, if there is one, play out here. And I mean, I have to assume that's part of the reason that we saw this resignation come so quickly.
And Pat, what's your instinct as a prosecutor say? I mean, is there any way he gets out of this without legal issues?
You know, it's tough to say, but usually when these things start, somebody leaks the fact that a subpoena has been issued fairly quickly, even though it's all supposed to be secret. So if they do one, which would probably come out of the Public Integrity Unit in Washington, I would imagine, we'll know. But back to kind of Eric's point, man, anytime you are sitting on a private jet, unless it's yours as a politician, you better make sure the paperwork's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know. You just know. You can't go, I didn't know. You can't go, it's sloppy. You can't go, oh, I was never good with accounting. You just know. There's a little inner voice that goes, well, I hope I don't get caught. That eventually turns into a little inner voice that I guess goes, I deserve this.
Well, I guess what makes it really even more hollow is when you go back a week or so ago when he was asked, did you break the law? And he goes, I hope not.
Oh, God.
Right.
7:28, more coming up. We'll talk about the mayor's race. We'll talk about Rahm's sweaters and other things as we continue. Oh, and the incredibly detailed Chuy García plan for the city that he couldn't reveal last week when he was on. It's 7:28 on 720 WGN.
Wherever cronies are receiving pinstripe patronage, that will end, that we will pay the city's debts, that we will ensure that city residents are receiving the type of services that they need.
The very story also acknowledged we're better than we were 4 years ago. We're not where we need to be. We're not going to change it overnight.
You're listening to The Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in downtown Chicago.
720 WGN.
It's a classic story. The guy with the job has to explain why things aren't so good. The guy without the job can tell you specifically how he's going to make it better. But that's not how we're playing here. Chuy García did himself no favors in the debate or last week when his specific detailed economic plan Friday included the word efficiencies and take a look at how money's being spent. How deep a hole does he have here?
You know, going into last week, where you had this great kind of expectations game from García, that he'd talked for months about how he had a group of financial experts going over things. And so there was an expectation game here that he was going to present a detailed financial plan. And instead, it was just this largely generic four-point plan that focused on finding greater efficiencies. And I don't trust the books of the
administration. Redoing the TIF program.
And then after I'm elected, I'll have a task force to examine various tax and revenue options.
I have to believe, and you guys jump in on this, I have to believe the Chuy García organization isn't strong to roll him out and have him set up for the ridicule that he's taken over Friday and the debate that followed.
Well, I think there's a fundamentally larger problem, which is, any campaign is about who controls the narrative. What's it about? And the Emanuel campaign, to their credit, and Rahm is one of the great tacticians of our time, strategists, has allowed the terms of the debate to be set around, does Chuy have a finance plan to solve the problem? The García campaign's fallen into that trap and said, oh, yes, I do. I can come up with it. Everybody knew, Rick Pearson knew the minute he said that, it was going to be torn to shreds the minute it came out, because there's no way he could come up with something.
So, that's interesting. It's like political rope-a-dope.
Well, but he's played into the narrative that the Emanuel campaign wanted. He needed to try to change the subject, and rather than do that, he's allowed it to be played on the Emanuel campaign's terms, which is why I think Rahm has moved ahead in what we thought was a coin toss a couple weeks ago.
But that having been said, and when Emanuel says, well, I have a plan, and when you look at what Emanuel's plan is, it's reliant on questionable passage of legislation in Springfield, highly doubtful in some cases, and things that he has tried to get passed out of Springfield in the past. So the realism of Rahm's plan is not necessarily much more real than what García has presented, but the way it's presented makes it look more realistic.
But here's the thing, Pat Brady. The voters are smarter than we think they are. They're also more disconnected than most people think, certainly more disconnected than the people in this room, because they have lives and they have things they want to do with their lives. And they're going to, you know, they're only going to pay attention when they pay attention. Is Chuy García's populist campaigning strong enough to connect in combination with the union support and the anti-Rahm vote that he has to make this closer than it appears to be?
It might be, but the thing I took away from the debate is, where was the happy Chuy? He didn't have the smile on his face, and the populist should be the happy warrior and the guy that's fighting for the people, and we're doing this because it's right. We don't worry about details. But that didn't come through in the debate. I thought that was as detrimental to him as, like, I completely agree with Eric, letting the mayor dictate the narrative. But the one takeaway on the positive side I took from watching the debate was red light cameras and your crony buddies, and that does resonate with the populist crowd and the people that did support him, including the unions.
I think the other challenge, Steve, is you know, the mayor of a big city is in some ways the personification of the city, and so there's a power in the personal narrative. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen a personal narrative out of Chuy García. You know, we've seen a lot of populist lines, and we've seen, like you said, I think it was amazing. He did seem kind of angry and short-tempered when he was supposed to.
I mean, it's
nice
all
guy.
Relative when you're with the mayor.
With Ron. But there's a power to the personal narrative of somebody who is going to be the personification of a big city with an identity like this. And we haven't seen that out of Chuy. We certainly didn't see it in his first TV.
When he could have done the debate by personalizing the whole budget cuts and red light cameras, how this hurt. I mean, I completely – you don't know what he – you kind of felt like you did in the runoff.
Well, Eric, and you know, you talk about this idea of the first commercial of kind of the very first commercial he ran, where he's standing on some block where apparently he lived or whatever. Now we've got the first runoff ad from García, and you know, I just have this question: if you were trying to create a movement, progressive movement candidacy, coalition candidacy, and your ad now is similar to the first ad, now you're standing in front of a vacant school, but it's very static.
And you're alone.
And by himself.
There's nobody else.
That's a great point.
I think people want to be with a winner and see energy. And I have to tell you, so the night of the February 24th election, when he's standing on stage, now granted he finished, you know, second place, but that was a victory to get into the runoff. There was all that energy, you know, on that stage. And I'm going, I bet this is the ad. And it isn't.
And if you're trying to build a coalition, if you're trying to say, look, a Latino candidate can attract African-American and white support, and you appear alone with not another human being. I mean, that ad is about closing schools. There's no kids in the ad.
Yeah,
the other thing I would say, he makes a serious charge in that ad with no documentation. Now, I don't know whether the charge is – I don't even remember what it was.
It was that money was going to elite private schools.
Most voters – who I agree are more sophisticated would say, oh, I'd like to find out more about that.
Yeah,
but
you
that
see
true?
What he's saying is Rahm is funneling the school monies from the schools that were closed to charter school openings.
But then show me a newspaper
article. Where is
show
it?
Me
Where's
a,
the story?
A website link. Show me for more information on what's going on, go here. Voters don't always go there, but they like to know the information exists.
Or that there's some backup, independent backup right. to it.
More coming up in a second with a regular feature we call Knesset Corner. As we try to explain the Israeli political system in a second. First, traffic, trouble spots. Mary. Benjamin Netanyahu is in charge of the Israeli government, or is he? The system, it's a democracy, but it's a modified sort of situation. And you guys jump in here if you can explain it better than this, but... it's a proportional allocation of votes. You have to come up with a majority of 61 votes to be the ruling party. And once your proportional allocation for your party is done, then you take a bunch of people out for a bagel and a schmear, and you try to get to the magic number of 61 by including the various vote totals of the people that finish behind you. Is that accurate?
You described it pretty well. It's a parliamentary system, and it's complicated.
And the prime minister runs the country, and the president generally cuts ribbons and goes to malls.
Except in this situation, the president has some authority to sort of pick the ultimate coalition, which makes it even more complicated.
So does Netanyahu win ultimately? Because this thing seems like it's done, but with all these negotiations still to happen and him calling an election that he almost lost, it doesn't seem like there is a lot of support in the Congress of Israel, the Knesset. Maybe the vote total is what it is, but does he have support of the politicians?
Again, I'm not an expert on the system, but it sure looks like he will emerge retaining his office.
Well, he got 30 seats in his own party, which was a lot more than was projected. But interestingly, you can't poll within 4 days of an election in Israel, which is not a bad rule.
Yeah, I don't know where this goes, and I don't know if it changes anything. I mean, we know the president and Netanyahu aren't pals.
But there is an aspect here that I think the information's anecdotal. Maybe we'll see some more quantitative information that the injection of the dislike between Netanyahu and Obama was a factor with the Israeli electorate. And the insertion – this to me is the most fascinating and sort of silly, but there's a American political firm
mm-hmm.
that were previously affiliated with President Obama that were involved with Netanyahu's opponent. Now, I guarantee you, if you asked President Obama, did you know these guys were doing this, he'd say, like, who are those guys? Were they in the back room? But in the Israeli electorate, it became an issue that somehow President Obama and the White House were meddling in an Israeli election.
Don't you think, though, too, they overplayed the Netanyahu coming to the Congress hand? It was like, just let him do it. And if they made it such an issue of it, it became for 10 days in Israel, that was the issue, that Obama didn't want him to speak to Congress. He just said, fine, come and talk.
And Rick, I talked to a news organization in Tel Aviv on the morning of the election who said, look, yeah, the USA piece of this is a concern, but this is a local election. This is about economics. This is about schools. This is about everything that elections are supposed to be about. So,
well, and I think that's a good point because, you know, obviously we're looking at it through a different prism as far as, you know, the defense of Israel and the political ramifications, the Republicans taking, you know, great joy in promoting Netanyahu against this kind of infighting that's going on between him and Obama. The fact that every 2016 candidate on the Republican side released a statement congratulating Netanyahu while there's crickets coming out of the White House. I mean, all kind of very interesting dynamic. But yeah, you're absolutely right. In Israel, it is a local election. And while, yes, you know, everybody goes to great pains to say that U.S. is Israel's greatest ally, you have all that coming also at this time of the Iran nuclear talks and the tensions that exist in that. I mean, it will be interesting to see how this moves forward, particularly with these negotiations scheduled to be wrapped up pretty soon.
Yeah, he really, when the Palestinian issue said in the last couple of days that he didn't go along with the two-state solution, that could really make Israel very isolated.
Yeah, and that amps up our involvement, right? Because we have to protect. I mean, Obama and Netanyahu aren't going to like each other for another 18 months. So what? They haven't liked each other so far. And the greater interest of both countries and the world, I think, would supersede it. They both have to lead.
I think in the end, though, it was the Chuck Norris ad for Netanyahu.
Got it done?
Yeah. But did you know he had an ad called The Babysitter, which was...
Yes, BB the Babysitter,
a terrific ad where, again, it played against type of him being distant and cold and hard, where he shows up at a young couple's house. They answer the door. And they say, Mr. Prime Minister, what are you doing here? He says, I'm here to babysit the kids. And it was sort of like, you're the Prime Minister. He goes, well, you don't want the other people babysitting your kid. It was all about protecting the kids. And it ended with him kind of on the couch watching TV, eating treats with the kids and a blankie over him.
Yeah, a soft thing.
It was really, really well done. It played to his strength, but also punctured that, you know, he's somehow this cold, distant.
I didn't see the Chuck Norris one. Did he do it in Yiddish, the entire thing?
No, but there were Yiddish subtitles.
What about John Voight? Did you
John
see
Voight, John Voight's head? Yeah.
He did.
It might have just been YouTube. I didn't
as the character from the TV show where he's the Boston Mafia guy, or
no, the guy, the Midnight Cowboy.
Don't you love overseas commercials?
That's a new thing we're doing right after Knesset Corner.
Yeah.
Mickey Donovan.
Got a break and got to run. But before we do that, Hillary got great polling numbers yesterday. We're still a long ways out, but were you surprised by her lead and that no other Democrats made on any other inroads?
Not really. I mean, I think we said this a week ago. The email thing to me is kind of an insider media creation. I don't think voters, for the most part, believe that it has much to do with whether she could or would be a good president, and I think these poll numbers reinforce that.
I think when substance starts becoming part of this campaign, particularly foreign policy, with 7 in 10 people in this country don't think that the president's doing a good job, then Hillary's going to have to answer for a lot of that.
We have a long way to go, and you know, it's elections are people who run against each other, and We know.
Unless you're in the Democrat primary.
Yes, but I'm talking more
about... We learned that from Republican primaries.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you're welcome.
You two, go to your corners. Eric, what's your website?
Edelsteinliston.com.
Pat?
NextGenerationPublicAffairs.com.
The questions get harder later.
Yeah. Don't ask me about my Twitter handle.
And Rick Pearson, Sunday Spin, 7 a.m. Sunday morning, Chicago Tribune and ChicagoTribune.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Couple minutes before 8, back after this, 720 WGN.